Lisa. This is Shuana Sko. Welcome to the Klamath Tribes podcast. We are speaking with Devri Saluskin, Recovery Support Supervisor at the Klamath Tribal Health and Family Services Youth and Family Guidance Center. Devri, how are you? Please feel free to introduce yourself in whatever way you see fit.
I'm good. Thanks for inviting me. My name's Devri Saluskin. Galasiasis, Devri Saluskin, the grandson of Yvonne and Bunny Weezer on my mom's side. And on my dad's side, Edgar Saluskin and Roma Jean Scott. My mom's Brenda Jackson. My dad's Devri Saluskin. And those are my people, the family that I come from here in Klamath County, Southern Oregon. Born and raised, left a few different times for going to school, failing school and succeeding at school. And now, yeah, working as recovery support and behavioral health for the Klamath Tribes. And been there about 10 years.
Thank you, Devri. And just so people get a little familiar with me, Gawasas is Shuana Sko. My mother is Camille DeLorme. Her mother, Teresa Wright DeLorme. Whose mother is Mary Silvers Wright, whose mother is Esther Hart Silvers, whose father is Lionheart, and whose father is Chinchelo Mucas, one of our signers of the 1864 treaty. We are here together to talk about grief and grieving and what that looks like for our tribal community, because it is not only something we experience personally or individually, but also collectively as a nation, as a group of people, as a family. And we are also doing this podcast in response to the recent murders, a double homicide that recently occurred to one of our tribal families, where two young girls, the granddaughters of one of our council members, Les Anderson, were murdered. Because of that, there is a wave of grief that does come over our community. And this is not an unfamiliar feeling or experience. So Devri, I understand that today you participated in an activity that is meant for healing or something that is helpful in our grief. Would you like to talk to us about that?
Sure. We went out and dove in deep pools of cold water as a response to the grief that spread over our community as a result of that tragic event that took place a couple weeks ago. And even though I didn't know the girls and I didn't know the boy, I didn't know either dad on either side. I didn't know either mom on either side. It is heavy on my heart and spirit because I have similar experiences in my family history. And when this happens, because we're a tribal people, we're all close in our history, and we have a similar history that went through termination, which is a really violent time, and we've gone through the same colonization process and the same assimilation process. We've gone through the same history that produced us here today. And what that means is when something like this happens, it affects all of us, and some of us more than others, because it reminds us of something that happened to us. So it opens up a wound that may have been healed or been getting healed, and it opens up that wound. And that's what I mean when I say it's heavy on my heart and it's heavy on my spirit. It's heavy on my mind, even though I didn't know these girls or that boy or the families. And so we went and dived in this water, and our water here is, you know, we got the best land. When we were created, in the best land. We come from land where water comes out of the ground and you can drink it straight out the ground. And we have Crater Lake, and we have lakes and rivers, and we have clean water that you can see straight to the bottom. Some of it's really very polluted, but you know, when it comes out the ground, it's clean and it's cold. And when you dive into that water, you're strengthening yourself, and you're strengthening your physical tolerance to pain, and you're strengthening your emotional tolerance to pain. And you do that, and you dive in 5 times or as much as you can, and you receive that strength, that emotional strength to be able to endure, to be able to go on, to be able to carry on. This is a response that our people did. We have a story that was called Coyote's Wife. And Coyote's wife died and was a custom at that time to burn all the stuff, all their belongings, even the house. And that's an important part. That's not just like a minor piece. You burned it. Okay? And then when he got done doing that, he had these other things that he had to take care of, he was going to go dive in the deep pond to gain power. That was the way that our old ones seen it. That's what Coyote was going to do. They seen the time of death as a time to gain power. It's not a time for grabbing a bottle of whiskey. It's not a time for getting a bag of dope. It's not a time for closing all the curtains and pulling the blanket over your head. It's not a time for quitting to live and doing the things that you used to do. There, we used to have a word, and I got it on this document. Maybe I'll look it up. But basically that word meant to run up steep hills and dive in deep waters during the time of grief. So I'm Modoc. I'm Saluskin's a Yakima Indian name. My grandma was a Scott from Warm Springs. Roma Jean Scott, that's a Warm Springs name. Wasco, actually. My dad, Yakima. Saluskin's a Wenatchee Pum name. My grandma told me when I was a little kid, you're not Klamath, you're Modoc. And this is the way, she's the one that showed me the most love, and this is the way that I come up. So even though I have all these other tribes and different blood, I'm Modoc. And I'm proud to be Modoc. And one of the reasons I'm proud to be Modoc is because of how tough my ancestors were. That's one of the reasons why I'm proud to be Modoc. But they weren't tough just because they were born tough. They made themselves tough. And they made themselves, one of the ways that they made themselves tough was by diving in cold water and running up steep hills when somebody died that they loved. They didn't just quit living and they didn't start drinking. They made themselves stronger. It was a time to gain power. So Coyote, that's a main point for me of that story. When Coyote's wife died, after that, after he burned that house and he was going to head to the deep ponds, at first he ran into, there were some moccasins on the trail, and he rejected them. He didn't receive them. He continued on, and there was a feast of food that was on the trail, and he refused it and he rejected it. He didn't receive the food. And then further down that path, he ended up coming to a woman was on the path, and he rejected her and he refused her each time, saying, my wife had just died, I'm not taking that. Finally, he come up and there was a pile of plums, and he washed his mouth out, as was a custom at the time, before he ate something. And he ate the whole pile of plums. He made himself sick and ended up saying, don't eat plums when somebody dies. And that was a custom of our people. To me, you know, maybe there's more to it that I don't understand, but part of it was gaining power during a time of grief and diving in deep pools of water during times of grief. And that's what we did today. That's why we did it today. It was a response. Our tribe had a community gatherings in Chiloquin and Klamath Falls after those homicides. And as conversations proceeded during those meetings, or at least the one in Klamath Falls, somebody asked what we were going to do for the kids. And that was the suggestion.
Thank you for sharing that. So it sounds like our tribe has had a long history of responding to loss and to responding of feelings of grief in a way that's active, in a way that's healthy and strength building, and really focused on movement and not stagnation, staying in that state of grief. I'm wondering if you have any suggestions, practical suggestions, for tribal members to engage in that is in alignment with our traditional stories, our traditional practices with moving through grief. So one is what you experienced today, and that was jumping into cold water, doing that 5 times. Is there anything else that comes to mind?
Our people would sweat, and we had a grief sweat, and it was different than our regular sweat. It was the difference was it was subterranean, it was covered by dirt, and it wasn't like covered with, you know, other materials. And it was specifically for grief. And there were 3 of them that I know of that were situated around Klamath Lake, one on the north end, one on the east, and one on about the southwest corner. And there were people living other places than those locations. And so when somebody died, they had to, at first, you know, you burn the stuff. You don't dwell on it like that. You know, I think today with phones and it's easy to kind of have it in your face all the time. And, you know, our people used to not say the name of that person. They would cut their hair. And that was a time of grief. They had put pitch on their face. That was something that, you know, maybe people wouldn't want to do today. But I would say you wouldn't dwell on it. Our people would have to accept it. You have to accept that person's gone. In the old days, old Indian days, they would cremate. And when they would cremate, you'd have to go and gather wood. And it takes a lot of wood to burn a body. And so you can't just sit in your house on the couch. You got to get up and take care of business. Like, you don't quit living just because somebody else is no longer here. So I think that's a practical thing, is to continue living, you know, as much as possible. Don't drink, obviously. Don't do drugs, and continue trying to live. And, you know, there's going to be obviously all those funeral arrangements that you got to take care of. And for us, we dig graves. We dig our own graves. And there's a kitchen crew that goes and helps feed the people. And there's a lot of different tasks that need to be accomplished to be able to take care of that. There's, you know, you can build a casket. You know, it doesn't have to be a Cadillac casket. It could be, you know, something that's going to keep your mind busy and not, you know, in the agony. So you can sweat. We don't have a grief sweat right now. And, you know, that's a part that's missing, and that's a part that I want and, you know, have proposed for our people at Tribal Health to put up on our land there at Wawia Owite, the healing place there in Klamath Falls, our new tribal health building. And it got rejected the first time it got put forward. And, you know, we're just going to have to put it back and on the table and see if, you know, we can try to run it through there again. But I would say, you know, our people would cremate and they would have to accept that that the death had happened. They would have to gather that wood. They would have to walk to the place where the grief sweat was. If they didn't live right next to it, they'd have to get there. They couldn't just sit there. And, you know, all those things I think are practical and easily transferable to today. You know, there are some other things that you know, a person could probably do. You know, just depending on what they were open to. We have songs, you know, about looking towards the west, which is the place where the spirit land was. That's where heaven was in the west. And it took a period of time to get there. And it was a beautiful place. And all the ancestors, when you get there, all your ancestors are happy to see you. And they're not trying to come back here. They're happy and they're content where they are. But it's important you know where, that our people know where that is. Because if you think about the person that you love the most, I want you to imagine that person and where they are right now. And how long it would take you to get there to them. Because the regions in the brain that light up when you're feeling affection towards somebody, and the region of the brain that lights up when you're thinking about the distance, spatial distance and time distance, they're really close and really the same space. So affection and time are really connected. Now, if you think about the person that you love the most and all of a sudden you don't know where they are, you're going to have a sense of panic and you're going to have a sense of urgency or fear because you don't know where they are. And so if somebody passes away and you don't know where they are, that's always going to probably give you a little bit of uneasiness, and you need to know where they are. So for us, it's in the west, and we have a song that says to look to the west and take your to the place where the land, you know, the spirit land is. And there's another song that talks about, basically just says, now your spirit is gone. Like, it's like, you know, yeah, it's gone now. I'm not gonna sit here and think, what if I would have done this, or what if I would have done that, or, you know, kind of really trying to go back in time. You know, you're accepting it. And then, you know, after you're done with your services and you're done, then you clean yourself off. There's a song for cleaning yourself off. And I think, you know, however you do that, those are probably important to do in order to be able to grieve, you know. But really, you know, there's nothing that helps when you lose a young one, you know. That really helps, you know, because those practices were, like, before we had probably so much unexpected and young people dying, you know, it was probably a different time. And, you know, I know that our people have gone through really, really bad times. I've seen a statistic from this lady at that Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board that said, she gave me some slides, and it said that 50% of the population of our tribe that died between 1960 and 1980 were under 40 years old. So everybody that was dying wasn't old people, it was young people. And it's harder to accept when young people go. But these are hopefully some things that might be able to help.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's one thing that does separate us, or have us have our experience as Indigenous people be different than non-Indigenous peoples, because it's not only our elders that are passing, and it's not only those who are experiencing chronic illness, But we have a variety of reasons and variety of ages of why people pass away in our tribe, in our community, and it really impacts us in just a big way that tends to create this sense of being out of control, this sense of wonder of why this happened. And it sounds like our traditional practices allowed us to have a feeling of being empowered and coming back into control by knowing where the spirit land is, knowing where our relatives, loved ones are, and providing us ways to come into acceptance. And you mentioned a couple of those practices. So it sounds like our traditional ways that are healing, that move us through grief and toward acceptance, are accessible now through jumping in water, sweat, song. And I'm also wondering, due to colonization, due to all of the efforts that were made against us, it resulted in our people being less connected and a little bit more isolated. And so if we're experiencing collective grief but feel very isolated and maybe shame around grieving, do you think that collective healing is also helpful and not experiencing going through grieving or grief alone?
Yeah, I do. I think there's another story, and it's about the butterfly, and she was, well, they were, the butterfly family was the best root diggers. And the chief's son was going to marry one of the butterfly daughters. And on the way, they got all the stuff that they were going to go and give to his family. And they were heading to the wedding. And the crow wanted her. And his name was Gok. And he laughed. And when what he could do, one of his powers was he would laugh at people and he would turn them to stone. And so he laughed at them and turned her whole family to stone except her. So her whole family was dead. And she at first went and they were the best diggers. And she went back out and she outdug everybody. And then she went and she made a basket, and then she the people were being kind of rude to her, mocking her, and she went back into her house and she never came out again, and she died. And that's how the story ended. And there was a butterfly went into her house and died. And I think that story illustrates the importance of not isolating, of as you say, community grieving or coming together to heal. Our old story said, don't go off and just be by yourself. You know, there's also more to that story, I think, than just that one lesson. But you know, if people are out there and they're stuck in that and they want help, then call us up. Come on in. Our phone number is 541-884-1841. But we need our people to reach out to us and let us try to help, because that's what we're there for. And tribal health exists because of that colonization process that you talk about. It's our traditional territories went from Mount Shasta up that Cascade Range to east of Bend, outside Sisters. And then it went clear across over there by Burns, and then it went down the lines, our traditional territories. When we signed that treaty, we gave up this chunk of land that went down to Lakeview and then back, you know, kind of diagonal back towards Mount Shasta. 22 million acres that was exchanged for promises through a treaty. And the treaty in the United States Constitution that seems to be so popular nowadays, the Constitution seems to be way more popular than it was, you know, 20 years ago. Everybody's trying to hold it up. And there's a part in that Constitution that says treaties are supposed to be the supreme laws of the land, not second, not third, not fourth law of the land, the supreme law of the land, the treaty. Guess how many treaties in the United States with Indian tribes have been broken? Okay, but that's not where I'm going. I'm just saying that the treaties are what changed our way of living. We weren't able to continue hunting and fishing and gathering and building our houses and cremating and doing all those things that we used to be able to do. Our lives changed. And when it changed, then housing came in, health and education come in, all these other kind of services start coming in as a result of those treaties. So people that are out there and they're grieving, it's your Indian right as an Indian person, the first people from this land, to reach out to your tribal health and get some help. So don't feel like you're going to be a burden on anybody. Just do that.
So if you're feeling alone in grief, and what I tend to say is, as a Native person, I have never known one day without grief, because we are born into it with our generational trauma, and then different things open up that wound, whether it's different relatives passing away or different losses. So I know grief and grieving is very familiar to each one of us, and how we cope with that might look very unique, but there are traditional ways to move through grief in a healthy way. And there are resources like the Klamath Tribal Health and Family Services that provide support to move through grief and feelings of isolation or depression, sadness, anxiety, anger, anything that might come up, whether it's a feeling to want to distract or numb. Also, the Klamath Tribes offers services to support us, so we do not have to go through any of this alone. And that number is 541-884-1841. Thank you so much for being here, Devery, and thank you for your stories, your insight, and for being a proud Modoc person. I'm a proud Klamath person. Is there anything else you'd like to add or share?
No, just thanks for the invitation, and no, I guess that's about it.
So catch them looks. And thank you all for listening. You've been listening to the Klamath Tribes podcast. I'm Shuwinesko. Unchu.